thanks for the invitation and the introduction. So today I'm going to talk about the Hubble tension problem and how the neutrino-assisted early dark energy can be a solution. So this work is this talk is based on this paper written with my supervisor Mark Troden and our collaborator Jeremy Sexton and Mariana Carlo Gonzalez. And so I will start from a brief introduction to the Hubble tension problem, which is the tension between the late time measurement and the early time measurement. Recently, this tension has beyond the 5 sigma in some combination of the data sets. And then I will talk about what is early dark energy and how it can solve the Hubble tension problem by lifting up the early time measurement of the Hubble constant. Then I will talk about the two coincidence problem intrinsic in the early dark energy, and then how why we should try to come up this neutrino-assisted early dark energy model. So I will talk about the model building and then show you the cosmic evolution of the neutrino-assisted early dark energy. Then I will end up my talk with a discussion. So let's first remind ourselves the first time in the history that our human being find the universe expanding. That's in 1924, the American astronomer Edwin Hubble found that the galaxies are moving away from us. The further they are, the faster they are moving from us. So of course, he did not measure the distance and velocity like directly. What he got is he measured the luminosity and used that to determine the distance. And then he measured the characteristic line in the spectrum to know the redshift. So that gives the velocity of the galaxies. So even though he measured a much younger universe, the method, which is called the standard candle method, is still being used nowadays. So from this plot, you can see that we have a lot of local measurement for the Hubble constant, that is the expansion rate at our current universe. So we have this standard candle give us like 74 kilometers per second per megaparsec. And we also have some other independent measurement, like the strong lensing time delay. And in the future, we will have more precise gravitational waves as a standard theorem to give us a Hubble constant. So all these local measurements combined together give us a relatively large Hubble constant number, that is about 74. On the other hand, we also know that given the universe expanding, looking forward in time, it is collapsing, you know, looking back in time. So there is a time that the universe is very hot and dense. So back then, the photon was trapped in the plasma. And then when the universe expands and then it's diluted, so there is a last scattering for the photons to escape from the plasma. And then we can measure these photons, and we call them the cosmic microwave background like data. So from this, we can also obtain the information at the early time, at the early universe. This is another way to obtain the Hubble constant, which we call the early time measurement. It's the same as most of the local measurements. We do not measure the Hubble constant directly. What we have, the direct parameters, is the sound horizon scale, which is the first peak of the acoustic, which is the scale of the first peak in the temperature fluctuation. So we use that, and together with a lambda CDM standard cosmological model, to give us a Hubble constant, which is the expansion rate at our current universe. So this early time measurement gives us a smaller Hubble constant number, that is about 67. Oh, I should say, feel free to ask me questions at any time, and if I'm going too fast, just stop me. Because the early time measurement favors a smaller Hubble constant, this tension between the early time measurement and the local time measurement is the so-called Hubble tension. So we can see from this plot that back to 2000, like 20 years ago, both methods have very large error bars that the Hubble constant seems to overlap. But now, in recent several years, it seems to have more and more severe tension. And I believe now it's beyond 5 sigma for some combination of the data set. When I say the combination of some data set, it means because we have many independent local measurements, some of them favor slightly larger Hubble constant, and some of them favors a smaller one. So that's what I mean. Okay, so since there is like a tension there, so one wants to understand how to solve this Hubble tension. First come to our mind is this is the observational issue. So in the future, if we have better resolution and if we have better data, like building a more new telescope, for example, we have another like substitution for Planck, we might, and if we develop some new statistics to analyze the data, it's possible that the tension is not a real physical tension. However, I also want to point out the possibility that Hubble tension may also be a hint to the new physics, indicating that our understanding of the cosmological model need to modify it, either at the late time or at the early time. So there, I'm listing some of the solutions, like more theoretically modification to the to some part of the cosmology to solve the Hubble tension. So for example, one tried to modify the distance ladder or like changing the standard candle to solve the Hubble tension by making the late time Hubble constant smaller to match the early time measurement. Or today I will focus more on the early time solutions that is before the recombination and involves a modification to the standard cosmological model. So today, I will mainly focusing on this adding additional mass energy component into the universe to solve the Hubble tension. For a good reference, I recommend this paper, which is a very good review, like a Hubble tension hunter, for the modification that you could do to solve the Hubble tension. So now let's go back to the early time measurements and ask why adding additional mass energy component could solve the Hubble tension. So let's remind ourselves again that the direct parameter is the theta at the sun horizon scale, which is the ratio of the sun horizon RS to the angular distance dA. So this is directly measured, and these two are computed based on our cosmological model. So that's where the modification to lambda CDM can enter the game. So we can compute the sun horizon and the angular distance individually by integrating the velocity times time. Basically, it's, so even though it looks a little bit complicated, it's literally just velocity times the time. The Hubble expansion rate in the denominator is compensated because we are using the redshift, not the physical time t. This CS is the sun speed because photon was traveled in the plasma before the before the last scattering. And afterwards, it traveled at the speed of light. So we set the speed of light to be one here. So, you could get that the angular distance is inversely proportional to the current Hubble constant, and then we can infer that the Hubble constant obtained from the early measurement is proportional to the theta s, which is determined by the data over the sun horizon. So if we could increasing the energy density by making this expansion rate before recombination larger, we could reduce the sun horizon, and inversely, this will give you a larger Hubble constant obtained from the early measurement. So that's the why if we add additional mass energy component here in this it can reduce the sun horizon and make the early measurement of the Hubble constant larger, so as to solve the Hubble tension. Okay, then now is the model building come into this story because we need to understand the properties of the component that we can add into the universe. So and we also know that we we build up the cosmology history not only based on the CMB, but also many other observations. So, for example, can we have additional radiation component? So the answer probably be no, because that would be the relativistic species. And then we know that the BBN, Big Bang nucleosynthesis, like pretty tightly constrains the relativistic species to be ineffective equals to 3. Then you could ask, maybe can we have some matter component? But then we also know that later the CMB constrains the energy density of the matter very precisely. We know omega B and omega dark matter pretty well. So the feature of the new physics, if we look back to this universe cosmic history, which is radiation dominated and later matter dominated plot, we know that we get the conclusion that the new physics should be subdominant at the radiation dominated time to not affect the relativistic species. And then it should decay away very fast to not affect the CMB constraint of the matter. But we still wanted to lift up the Hubble constant so that so the new physics should enter the game at the recombination time and should contribute to about 10% of the total energy so that it could, you know, do the job, like reduce the sun horizon and lift up the Hubble constant. So that's a big picture of what kind of new physics we want to add into the game. Now we could start to try to write down the simplistic scalar field theory, like from the mass term. So if we look at this plot that is m squared phi squared potential, then we could try to write down the equation of motion, which contains a 3H phi dot term. So we know that at the early time, when the when the Hubble expansion rate is much larger than the mass term, it behaves like a friction term to stop the field from rolling down. So what the field do is the field will stay here and do not have any kinetic energy. And that will behave like a dark energy, because the equation of state would be -1, because it does not have any kinetic energy. So all the energy density is from the potential energy, and that is the behavior of dark energy. So this is good, because we want it to be subdominant before the recombination. And if it behaves like a dark energy, like equation of state is -1, it is indeed subdominant at the recombination at the radiation dominated time. And then when the Hubble rate decreases to the mass scale of the early dark energy, like when the Hubble rate is a similar magnitude of order as the mass scale, the friction is not strong enough to hold it there. So the field would start to roll down. And then it gains the kinetic energy and will contribute to like 10% of the total energy at the recombination time. So again, this is good, because it also do what we desired for the new physics at the recombination time. However, since the potential is purely a mass term, we know that later it will oscillate at the bottom of the potential. That means it will behave like matter after the matter radiation equality. So what does that mean is later behavior will decay as if it's a matter. So that is A2-3. So as we said before, this will contribute to the matter component in the CMB constraint, and we do not want that. So in terms of the model building, that means we need something that decays faster as this dotted line, but not as this a solid line. So we want something decay faster, and so that in terms of the potential, we need a flatter bottom, because the flatter one will give you a faster, larger kinetic energy component, so that decays away faster. So then the next simplistic model you could add is the self-interaction. So after the mass square, phi square, we have lambda phi 4. So basically the whole story is similar. So at the beginning, the field stay on somewhere on the potential, and then you could compute the effective mass. And then when the Hubble rate decreases to this effective mass scale, it starts to roll down and contribute this 10% at the recombination time to reduce the to reduce the sun horizon and increase the Hubble constant. However, this potential is still not flat enough. So it does not, in terms of the data point of view, it's not a phenomenological successful model. So later in this original early dark energy work, they propose that if my potential takes an axion-like form, but with an additional index n, so it's not an axion. If my model takes this form, then this is this fits the data very well and recovers all the desired properties that we want the early dark energy to do. For example, like early times is behave like dark energy, so it's subdominant, and then it starts to roll down to gain the kinetic energy and behaves like this cake in the fractional energy density and contribute like 10% to help solve the Hubble tension. And then after the recombination, because they add this additional N index, so normally the best model is N equals to 3. So this at the bottom will behave something like 5 to 6. So it decays away very fast and does not affect the CMB. CMB constraint. So this is a very phenomenological successful model in terms that it solves the Hubble tension. It does not change our understanding of other times universe. And it's also a very simple scalar field theory. That means people are trying to find the UV completion, like trying to seek what kind of UV physics could give this early dark energy model. As far as I know, I think there are some recent work to build up the early dark energy from supergravity or string theory, like treating this as some axion or dilaton. So that's the advantage of this original early dark energy model. But I also want to point out some of the disadvantage. For example, I don't know how many people are familiar with the acid tension, but generally speaking, if you try to solve the Hubble tension by reducing the sun horizon, it will drive the acid tension in the wrong direction. In the wrong direction by the sense that making the acid tension from 2.2 sigma to 2.4 sigma. So I'm not fully convinced that the acid tension is a real tension. So this might not be an issue, but of course, if we want to build up a model, we want the model to solve both Hubble tension and acid tension, even though I don't quite know whether the acid tension is a real tension. So that's one point that might be good to keep in mind. But today I want to talk about two other.
Can you be a bit more specific? So when I say, is that really a 0.2 sigma change?
Oh, 0.2 sigma change.
Yeah, 0.2 sigma.
I guess so, in most of the models that I'm aware of. So it's not a sphere one. So that's some disadvantage. But now I'm going to try to talk about them, like from a theoretical point of view, are more coincidence problem. So we have mentioned the key mechanism to contribute to the cake is the coincidence that the mass scale of the early dark energy is the same as the Hubble rate at the recombination time. So that's essential because we want this cake happened at the recombination time, right? So by that original mechanism, this means the mass of the early dark energy has to be around 10 to minus 27 eV to solve the Hubble tension. And then also the initial conditions, like where the field start to be on the potential is highly fine-tuned. as far as I know, that if you talk about that 1 minus cosine phi over f type of potential, you have to start very close to the top. That is the coincidence that I'm mentioning now. So a natural question that one can ask is, can we relate this typical characteristic energy scale with some physics that happened around the recombination time so that to make the model more natural? Okay, that's the motivation to couple it to neutrino, because we noted, like you can notice that the new physics is important at the energy scale about 0.3 eV. And we also know that the sum of the neutrino mass is roughly speaking order 0.1 eV. So this seems to suggest that if we couple the early dark energy to the neutrino, then the neutrino can be a pretty natural trigger, because we know the neutrino turns non-relativistic, roughly speaking, at the recombination time or little after that. So this is what we call the neutrino-assisted early dark energy. So this was first proposed in this paper by my supervisor and collaborator Jeremy Sexton. So in this paper, they consider a simplistic coupling, that is the conformal coupling. So they couple the early dark energy to the neutrino sector, and then by this e to 2 beta phi over m Planck, and then you could assume this coupling is small, you could write down the expansion and find that the linear term behaves like a Yukawa coupling, right? Like a phi nu bar nu. And then, so this coupling, you could treat this as in Jordan frame. So if you transform it back to Einstein frame, you could write down the effective potential for early dark energy would behave like the original potential minus the beta phi over m Planck coupled to the neutrino's energy momentum tensor's trace. So this theta here is a trace of the neutrino's energy momentum tensor. And then we can compute this trace by the Fermi-Dirac distribution. Okay. And then, because we know there is a kick in the neutrino's energy momentum tensor, then by solving the equation of motion, you would find a peak in the scalar field, and then that leads to the peak in the Hubble constant. So it seems very suggestive that it can contribute. It can contribute like 10% energy at the recombination time to solve the Hubble tension problem. However, the simple coupling has some issues that I'm going to address. So I had better to stop here for now to ask if there is any question. Okay, cool. So I will show you. So in the rest of the talk, I will talk about our paper by extending this simple coupling. I will tell you like this simple coupling at some point will break the perturbation rules. And then we have to we solve this break of the EFT by adding by building another coupling within the effective field theory. And then
so the scalar field, it's the same as you said, that the minus 27 electron volt, or what?
No, we do not. No, it it depends on the potential that you choose, but generally speaking, we relax that condition.
So what is the potential that you choose?
Okay, I will show that later, but I think in this paper they were talking about lambda phi 4.
Okay.
Yeah. But because our mechanism to induce a kick is different, so we do not necessarily to require the mass to be at the same as the Hubble rate at the recombination. So that's a way to release the fine-tuning issue.
So your theory is a lambda phi 4 coupled with Yukawa coupling to neutrinos?
I think that's this paper.
Okay.
It's not quite ours. So, I'm going to talk about that. Good. Great. So now I'm going to talk about why at early time this simple conformal coupling does not work. So if for this effective potential, so this is the lambda phi 4 in the original potential, and then this is a coupling. The 3p minus rho is a trace of the neutrino's angular momentum tensor. And for this effective potential, one can compute that the field stays in the minimum created by the neutrino. And then, however, so one thing you can think is neutrino is ultra-relativistic at recombination time because it behaves like the radiation. However, neutrino is not a massless species. It still contains a very small but existing mass. And that mass is proportional to the trace of its angular momentum tensor and grows as a redshift getting large. So this trace is proportional to 1 plus Z2 square. So that means this minimum.
So the neutrino mass will change too, right? Like the phi wants to be in the place where the fermion goes to massless.
Yes. So you mean the neutrino's mass will be affected by this phi coupling, right?
Phi wants to move to the place like where the fermion couples to its masses.
Yes. I understand the question. So I think the but the phi minimum would stay in the so we start from the phi start at the phi minimum, and then this coupling to the neutrino's mass is suppressed by M Planck. So the effect on the neutrino's mass is from phi is small.
No, it depends on what the value of phi min is.
What?
The value of phi min, it doesn't have to, it starts from an arbitrary value. Phi starts from an arbitrary value. You don't know what the value initially is. From anywhere. So the question is, how do you make sure it stays at the minimum?
I hear you. I think in our work we're assuming that a field always stay at the minimum, and if you start a little bit off from it, it will always be attracted by the minimum. So
this is the part that's confusing, because there's a back reaction on phi min on the neutrino mass.
Mm-hmm.
So when neutrinos are relativistic, that is essentially zero. So you don't couple to the trace, right? So but you still couple to the mass. So there's back reaction on the neutrino. So the question is, what is the evolution of the phi field?
Sorry, what do you mean by the trace is zero?
I mean, it's the neutrinos are relativistic, right?
Yeah, but that means if you compare this trace with the Hubble constant, like with a Hubble rate square, like 3p minus or over h square is negligible. But if you just look at it, it still grows with the redshift.
Yeah, but that's the point. So mu in the second formula is a function of phi. Because it couples to the Lagrangian to the phi.
Yeah.
So there's back reaction. So you cannot disentangle the evolution of the neutrinos from the evolution of phi.
I see. I think we treat the phi contribution, like the back reaction, as the second order because the coupling is suppressed by M Planck.
So look at the values that you have there, right? So it's a significant correction to the mass. So if you go to early redshifts, the neutrinos are more than 100 times heavier than they are in the standard model.
I agree. So that's why this is not a good correction. That's where we break the EFT, right? Because this beta, this linear term is coming from the from the conformal coupling that e to 2 beta over phi, e to 2 beta phi over M Planck. So we are taking the leading order of that expansion. So it has to be smaller than one.
So let me understand something. So where does the coupling come from? You only couple the neutrinos, but if you say that there is some e to the minus, it will couple to everything.
Yeah.
Why are you ignoring the other couple?
Oh, good. So in this paper, they only couple to neutrino because only neutrino is turned non-relativistic at the recombination time. So it's okay to couple it to other field, but it would not help us solve the Hubble extension problem.
Yeah, but there is, so the way, so if you start from the Lagrangian that you write, G mu tilde.
Yes.
And you go to the Einstein frame.
Yes.
That will couple to the trace of the whole Lagrangian. So it will couple to everything that is massive. So you will have, for example, exclusion from field force experiments. Or an equivalence principle violation because your field is very light. So beta, for example, cannot be, for, if it couples to force, can only be 10 to the minus, I think a million times more than 10 to the minus 6.
Yeah, but I think we only couple it to the neutrino sector. We do not couple.
The way you write it, though, does not imply that. So if you write that, the way you write it, so this is the part that I want to understand. The conformal coupling, the way you write it, in the metric, it will couple to the whole trace of the Lagrange, not just the neutrinos.
Wait, but it's only coupled to the neutrino sector. We only couple this this neutrino.
Okay, that's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
You couple it to the neutrino sector. That's fine.
Yes. I will mention this later when we try to extend the model, but that's a good point because this is exactly why we do not want it to go beyond one, because this is literally the leading order when we take the exponential conformal coupling. So this is the issue in the original paper. Great, so what kind of thing we want is we actually want. So on the other hand, we also know that this linear coupling at the late time would give us a pretty nice like dynamics. So we want to recover it at the late time at you know at the redshift about 1000. But we need to find a better coupling to make this linear approximation do not exceed one to not affect the neutrino mass that much, basically. So the coupling that we introduce is new, like a phi square. Again, we only couple this part to the neutrino sector. And then you could write, so the action now takes this form. And we want this coupling goes back to the simple linear one at late time. That is the log of a of phi is about eta phi over m Planck at late time. And then what we also want this beta phi minimum over m Planck at early time is below one. So we give this a minimum set, we give this early dark energy a minimum set by a of phi. So the idea is at early time, this neutrinos, the trace of the neutrino energy momentum tensor actually dominant over the potential of the early dark energy. So the early dark energy's minimum is purely set by the coupling term. And then we give it, we build up this coupling by the EFT, by which I mean giving it a minimum and then expand to the higher order. So then we can choose the parameter inside the theory to go back the linear late time one, and then the eventual coupling would take this form. So this gives this nice suppression at the early time, and do not break the EFT. So the effect, the correction that it gives to the neutrino would never go beyond order one. And so.
Sorry,
go.
What are the sizes of these parameters that you're choosing?
This like beta phi over m Planck. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the parameter size right now, like after I introduce the early dark energy's potential. Okay. So this is.
I have another question about the trace anomaly. So in the early universe, So in the early universe, before electroweak symmetry breaking, for example,
yes.
So there is the running of the coupling of G2. So there is a trace anomaly proportional to the loop factor times T to the fourth.
Okay.
So what does that do to the evolution of the field?
Good. Sorry, I guess in my memory, I think all the loop effects coming from the early dark energy field would be highly suppressed. So only the neutrino loop would play a role.
This is an electroweak loop. So there's a coupling in the early universe that goes like, if you couple it to the trace anomaly, that goes like a loop factor times t to the fourth. It's not suppressed by the neutrino mass.
Sorry, the trace anomaly is because I have this conformal coupling, right?
Yeah. The reflex breaks conformal invariants. So in the early universe, before electroweak symmetry breaking,
yes,
there is a coupling that goes like gauge coupling squared times t to the fourth. That's a loop factor, but that's not suppressed by the neutrino mass.
Yeah, but the loop is computing from the early dark energy field, like the scalar field, right?
No, this is a tree level. You couple a tree level to trace t mu nu, right?
Yes.
And I'm saying trace t mu nu is not zero for relativistic particles if there is running of the coupling.
Oh, okay, sorry, I don't think we think about that.
Okay.
Yeah, can I ask you, like, afterwards? Okay, thanks. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so this is the coupling that we are going to use, and then the next question that we have in the model building is try to find a minimum model for the potential of the early dark energy. So again, we start with the mass term. So we want this mass term to protect the early dark energy from the neutrino loop because we want the theory to be like radiative stable. So if you compute the loop correction from the neutrino, then the bare mass of the early dark energy has to satisfy has a lower bound. So from this loop, neutrino loop computation, we put a lower bound on the early dark energy's bare mass, which is so these are the typical size that we are chosen. For example, the beta is about 100 to 1000. Neutrino loop, neutrino is around 0.1 eV scale, and then there is another M Planck factor coming into. Come back to your question before. Yes, this mass is seems still roughly at 10 to minus 27, 26 or something, but the dynamics is not determined by the coincidence of the mass and the Hubble rate.
Sorry, I didn't ask about that. So, no, the question was about the evolution of the field itself.
Yes.
So you're assuming that the trace anomaly goes like m neutrino squared times t squared. And I'm saying that's not necessarily correct. I'm saying that there is, before electroweak symmetry breaking, there's a g squared t to the fourth. And after electroweak symmetry breaking, I think there's a term that's proportional to temperature squared over m weak squared, at least, probably.
So would it be that at early times, in non-linear
the source field? Yeah, but the question is t over mw is not a small number compared to the neutrino mass. The neutrino mass is tiny compared to temperatures of mw. So I'm saying that the electroweak anomaly will dominate till BBN at least.
Oh, so you are saying like here, so it's not at the early time it's not dominated.
No.
By this.
Not dominated by that.
Oh, so you're saying it's like t squared over mw.
Yeah, times t to the fourth.
Oh.
So yes, there's going to be freeze up. I suspect after the neutrinos freeze up, that may not be there anymore.
Ah, I hear you. Yeah, before.
You understand what I'm saying now, right?
Thanks. Yeah.
So the evolution of the field will be determined by a combination of all these things.
Yes.
I mean, you may be able to drag it to the minimum. It's fine. But it needs to be checked.
Yeah, good. We definitely do not think about this before. Yeah, thanks for pointing out. This will anyway break the EFT. And then if we like start with a coupling that, if we start with a coupling that brings it down here, so no matter whether the early trace is dominated by the m squared t squared or the t squared over the mw squared, the important thing is the minimum is given by this coupling. Yeah, so for...
The question is that phi mean a realistic? Because you, right now, phi mean you assume it's a free parameter, isn't that right?
Which one is the free
parameter? The minimum value of phi part of the assume there, you take it as a free parameter, is that correct? This is what
Nayesh
said.
Yeah. I see, oh.
It's not a free parameter.
So if you have every time evolution, then you cannot just pick whatever you want. I guess that's the point.
I see. But my choice of the coupling is relatively free, right?
Yes.
So
there's bad reaction. That's the point. So the question is, how does the system? It may or may not be fine. You understand? It's just.
Yeah. We definitely forget.
There's bad reaction that's important in the early universe, given how large the terms are.
Yeah. I see. So basically, it's like when I write down this A of phi, it's better to include that before the electroweak symmetry breaking.
Even after, there is a bigger term that goes like T squared over MW. Mm. So there must be something due to the interaction.
Okay. Yeah, I would take a look at that later.
Okay.
Thanks. So, where am I? Okay, so we put a lower bound on the mass of the early dark energy, and then if you run the data, if you compute the cosmic evolution, you will find that a simple mass term is not enough to give the cake-like behavior. Because if you just have a pure mass term, the energy density of the early dark energy will approach a constant, but we want a kick behavior, so we want it to increase at the early time. That's why we add another self-interaction term, lambda phi 4, into the story. So the dynamic of our model building is that at early time, the field is sitting in the minimum that is created by the coupling. Basically, I guess what you ask is whether this phi bar is a free parameter or not. Okay, yeah, that's a part that I need to take a look later. But it does not affect the later time story that I'm going to talk about, and because I'm going to focus on the time that when this coupling can use the linear approximation. And then the field will first stay at the minimum, mainly dominated by the phi 4 term. So when the neutrino trace redshift to the sim scale at the self interaction term, and then the combination would give a phi minimum looking like this. Then at later time, the mass terms start to dominate in the early dark energies potential. And that would, and then also at that time, the neutrino would turn non-relativistic, so the pressure is negligible. And then the later times, phi minimum would be approximately something like this. So for a specific, so here I'm showing an evolution for a, like some characteristic parameter choice where none of them are fine-tuned. So later, I will show a contour plot to show that they are pretty. There is like for a pretty large range of the parameter choice, a parameter space, you can always have the cake-like behavior. So at the early time, like this part, green part, will be mainly dominated by the self-interaction term, and then at the later time, will be mainly dominated by the mass square term, and. You could also see that different compared to the original early dark energy, this neutrino-assisted early dark energy is always being very close to the minimum. So the it's always contributed as the energy density is always dominated by the potential energy, but there is little fluctuations around the minimum that oscillates along this red line, which is, so the red line is a phi minimum and the oscillation is a delta phi field. So there are several consistency checks. We can define the perturbation that is the phi field minus the minimum, and then we should expect it to behave like matter. Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. So your neutrinos have self-interaction.
Yes.
That is 400 times bigger than gravity. You have 500 squared bigger than gravity. So
you mean beta?
Yeah.
Oh, but beta is also the whole coupling is beta phi around Planck. So it's still suppressed.
But it's 500 times squared stronger than gravity. So does that affect clustering of neutrinos and the evolution of neutrinos? Forget about the phi. I mean, you can exchange phi. Phi is very light. You can exchange phi at a cosmological scale.
Yeah.
Does that do anything?
I don't think it's. I think that. So in our paper, we neglect all the back reaction, but we believe that the back reaction are actually small because it's not just beta. It's so the effect on the neutrino mass is like m nu times one plus beta phi over m Planck, and that is actually the correction is much smaller.
I'm not asking about that. I'm asking about something else. So you two neutrinos.
Yes.
Can exchange the phi particle.
Yes.
So there's a you have a force between two neutrinos.
Yes.
That's 500 times squared stronger than gravity.
So you are talking about a phi loop correction to the neutrino.
This is a three-level exchange. This
oh, okay.
Is a force.
Okay. Yes.
So I'm asking, does that affect the cosmology or evolution of neutrinos? For example. Much because this is an attractive force, it would cause clustering, so the value m nu that you infer is different from the one that is considered.
Yeah, so it's like the self-interaction between neutrino.
Exactly.
Like sorry, yes, I understand that. Yes, I will show later that it does not affect.
Okay,
sorry. Okay, and then another part is this phi minimum would contribute as part of the cosmological constant because the field is always staying in the minimum. So the good consistency check is whether this perturbation behaves like matter and whether this energy density affects the CMB result, and then whether this varying cosmological constant would be detected or ruled out by the maybe like ES, like varying varying W like survey. So the first thing we do is you can see from this plot that is the energy density of the perturbation delta phi. You can see after in the late time when the mass term is dominated in the early dark energy potential, it indeed go towards a constant, which indicates that it is indeed behaves like matter. And also the amplitude is 10 to minus 9. So that is not affect the CMB result. That's very nice. And then you could also compute the equation of state coming from the phi minimum, and you can see at low redshift, that is about when z is smaller than 50, then it goes back to minus 1 pretty close. So DES would not put constraint on such model because it decays away. It's not like, sorry, not decay away, but it's just go with the neutrinos energy density and towards zero at late time. Then this is a contour plot showing that for various different parameter choices, we could have this similar kick behavior. And then, so come back to your question, like, so this is a bound of the neutrino scattering from the CMB data. So this beta the CMB would constrain the neutrino self-interaction, and that translated to our coupling is so basically it's like a beta over m Planck together with this mass neutrino. So this is a much much loose constraint. So our beta is like 500. So it does not affect the CMB constraint on the neutrino self interaction. And also you could ask, this fixed force behaves like a U cover potential and might change and might break the equivalence principle. So that's a good point, but I don't think for now there is any constraint on this. To constrain the a break of the equivalence principle, one need to go to check some nonlinear power spectrum or like looking at the voids, like and check the like the clustering properties of the neutrino inside the voids to check this break like this additional like you cover fifth force. And then coming back to some of the earlier questions, so you could ask why I only couple to the neutrino sector. Can I also couple it to the other matter fields? So first, because all the other matters are much heavier than neutrino, right? Because like for example, the lightest electron is 10 to 6 magnitude order heavier than neutrino. So they will become non-relativistic much earlier than the recombination time. So they are irrelevant for Hubble tension. And also, even if you couple it to other matter field, and then you ask, would the would the LHC put any constraint to this U cover coupling? The result would be no, because I think in our paper, we tried to, we studied the coupling to like the whole standard model sector. And then for the heaviest particle, that is a top quark, you could the collider physics constraint is still loose. So you could couple it to you could couple the early dark energy to all the other matter fields, but it does not change how neutrino plays a role in this Hubble tension like focusing project. And also it would not have much other constraint from the like a ground collider physics constraint. So the other more interesting question is, can I couple to different neutrino mass eigenstate with different coupling? Actually, this has a very strong constraint from the neutrino oscillation experiments. From the K2K, the delta, so this delta beta IG square is beta I square minus beta G square. Basically, like beta I and beta G are the coupling constant to different mass eigenstates. This would be less than 10 to minus 16. So remember, our typical beta coupling is about 100 or 1,000. So this would be a very fine tuning constraint to satisfy that the difference between them is at the order of 10 to minus 16. So we have the conclusion that if this is tried to couple to the neutrino, it has to couple it universally. So the discussion to the future work is, I don't know if you take be careful about the magnitude of the order of the cake. Actually, that's much smaller cake compared to the original early dark energy. So our cake is like 10 to minus 3 to 10 to minus 4. So you can ask whether this cake could actually solve the Hubble tension. Well, in our paper we discuss this. The idea is, even though it's a smaller cake, it's also a much longer cake. So the cake actually, and then the effect to the sound horizon is the integration effect. So it's unsure whether it could actually solve the Hubble tension. We need to put it into the full data analysis to test whether this neutrino-assisted early dark energy can solve the Hubble tension. And the second thing is, to see if this can be a solution to both the Hubble tension and assay tension, at least drive the assay tension at this right direction. So I will give a quick conclusion. So I introduce the Hubble tension and I discuss why early dark energy, like the mechanism of early dark energy to solve the Hubble tension. And then I motivate you to why we want to couple it to the neutrino to make the model more natural. And then I say that the simple coupling would break the perturbation by which we need to be more careful about the coupling. And then I think that's a very good question about whether in my new coupling, the phi minimum is a free parameter or not. Yeah, I that I need to think more about that. And then eventually I'll show you some typical evolution behaviors and other details to as a self-consistency check for our neutrino-assisted early dark energy model. So that's it. Thanks for listening.
So just to follow up on the point that Mina made, I mean, I think this is a serious problem with the, I mean, you have a force which is 500 times stronger than gravity, which is the extent of the scalars. So as soon as neutrinos become non-relativistic, they're just going to come, even before that, because basically they see this force which is 500 times stronger, and it's a long-range force. So, 15 years ago, Matthias looked at this. Basically, there were models of dark energy coupled to neutrinos back then, and basically, our conclusion was neutrinos just going to clumps as soon as they become non relativistic. That may or may not be ruled out, but depends on your mass scales. But that, I mean, certainly, a structure formation.
That mass 26 is large.
Yeah.
It's large scales. But I don't know.
Yeah, but that could be a problem because then you have structures on large scales.
You looked at that, right?
Yeah, we have checked that.
Pull up your slide again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the answer to that would be the early dark energy scale, the typical scale is very different compared to the dark energy.
But so, I don't understand where that limit comes from. It might be a different thing that's being looked at.
That's another interaction. So there is a different limit. So that's been taken.
Which one? Sorry, which
one?
The top one, I don't know. The top one comes from cell interactions. So that's not 2-2-2. That's not correct. I think, but the question is, this changes the neutron constant.
Yeah.
Naish is
up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we do not have any constraint on that yet. Right? Do we have?
That's a good question. I don't know. But
yeah.
It's an order one effect. So
yeah.
See.
Yeah.
No constraint on it, even though it's an order one effect.
Yeah, I think I read some other like modified gravity series and how would that break the equivalence principle at order one. I don't, that's weird. Like people propose to see like the nonlinear power spectrum or the clustering properties inside the void. But I do not know if
but
that's
it might just be okay.
Yeah. So we put this constraint on the like the yeah, you cover like the you cover like potential, but as far as like at least when we write that paper, we do not have any constraint, and in these years I also didn't hear like too many news in that direction. Other questions?
Cool. All right. Well, since there have been a lot of questions and we're at the end of time, let's thank you.
Thank you.